Good morning, I'm Ludwig Oshuba, Colonel Advisor for this committee.
Now we know who's who, and we don't have to research if something leaks out in the news like this, and rely on any home or reliable source as to that and that. We can then pinpoint the name. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, we I think DG is still going to lead us into the presentation. But also just an apology for the minister, as you know, that he's one of the ministers that always does attend the committee meetings, and he always does the briefings himself, as well as taking the answers. The minister is just in an interministerial committee meeting as we speak, and so he has attended his apology, he wasn't able to make it, but we've got the senior staff of the department here. DG or acting DG? If I can say this, can we just give the DG 1 or 2 minutes to just say introductory remarks, and then we give over to the special advisor.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the honourable members. I must say, for me, it's very fortuitous to be able to be in this presentation. It's a briefing for me as much as the briefing for the select committee. Mr. Mother will do the presentation, and I do look forward to being able to interact with the select committee. I have an understanding that it's a very useful relationship, a very empowering relationship for the department, and certainly hope to be able to build on that going forward. But I think for me, I really am very new kid on the block, 3 days too late, and I will certainly be able to listen and receive the guidance from the select committee, and hopefully be able to ensure that the issues that get raised in the interaction go forward. So if I can hand over on that basis to Mr. Mark to do the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Acting DG is now special advisor.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, newly appointed DG, and colleagues from both the Select Committee and the Department. Honourable Chairperson, you made my job very easy by introducing all my colleagues, and especially the new Director General, and also for submitting the Minister's apology. And so I'm going to go straight into the presentation, but also from the outset just to also thank the Select Committee for your support and direction over the last 10 months when I was acting, and in particular your sub-chairperson. We've had a number of interactions and worked on a number of issues together. So it's good to be back, and we've agreed that I will do the presentation given that the DG has been in the job for the last 3 days. But I also need to report that the period that we're reporting, I basically took over as acting DG the last month into the financial year. So a major part of the work that I'm reporting on was under the leadership and direction of the former DG, Dr. Richard Levine, who's now the Director General at the Public Service Commission. Honourable members, the presentation will cover 7 key areas initially in terms of the performance of the department. And Chair, we're proposing that we're going to do the presentation in 2 parts. The first part will deal with the actual performance of the department, and then the second part will deal with the annual financial statements as audited by the Auditor General of South Africa. I will be assisted in the presentation by the Chief Director for Human Resources and our Chief Financial Officer. And so in starting with the performance part of the annual report, we will cover the areas of the mission of the department, the context within which we work, what are the key challenges facing us going forward, significant developments in relation to our work. We will highlight some case studies. We will then look at the key performance indicators and then deal with corporate services such as human resources and so on. Our vision and mission basically remains as in previous years, which we adopted when we our FRAP plan and annual performance plan was approved by Parliament. In terms of our vision, and just summarizing, it's basically decent work through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. In terms of our mission, the department aims to coordinate the contributions of government departments, state-owned entities, and civil society on economic development. We contribute to efforts that ensure alignment between economic policies and plans of the state and our agencies and government's political objectives and mandate, and promoting government goals of advancing economic development with decent work opportunities. Moving on to the success indicators, the outcomes to be measured against the targets of the new growth path and outcome 4, and outcome 4 is the economic cluster. The main indicators are employment creation, and during the period in which we are reporting, 300,000 new employment opportunities were created in the 2011-2012 financial year. It is above target, but disproportionately in the public sector. And most evidence suggests inequality has not improved. The economy grew by 2.8% in the 2011 fiscal year compared to the 2010 fiscal year. Moving on to the context in relation to the department, EDD is 3 years old. Our program of work has focused on implementation, including the National Infrastructure Plan, alignment within the state, the refocusing of the IDC, and the defining and implementation of the social accords. We work with our social partners to unblock projects, and with the consolidation of our programs and internal systems. The next slide basically deals with the inception of the department to our work. Currently, we moved from policy development and are now at a stage where we can start implementing on those policies that we've developed. The department and or the ministry was established for policy integration work in 2009. In the 2009-2010 financial year, we established a functioning department with strong governance systems. We also coordinated the response to the recession and the global economic crisis that started in 2008. In 2010, we transferred 6 public entities to the department and began the process of mandate alignment on jobs. And we also finalized the new growth path known as the NGP. During 2011 and 2012, we worked closely with other departments and spheres of government to align economic policy around the NGP and refocusing of the IDC. We engaged with key stakeholders to develop the social accords on the key NGP areas. This included organized business, organized labor, community representatives, and government. And we also supported development and implementation of the National Infrastructure Plan through the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. And we also embarked on a process to reform the small business entities. Moving on to the challenges going forward, externally, we saw that a slow economy in the period that we are reporting was a threat of downturn in Europe and possibly the US and China. Pressure appeared especially in terms of exports and financing for the infrastructure plan. And in our country, persistent inequalities led to conflicts both within the workplace and outside. And within the department, we experienced a shortage of high-level personnel reflected in staffing challenges and establishing new systems. We do, however, have mitigation strategies for all of these. And we believe that through our work with the Select Committee and other committees at Parliament, there can be a key role in coordinating parliamentary inputs in terms of ministries and departments. Moving on to important developments for the year that we're reporting on, a key area that we focused on was the National Infrastructure Plan. And as the Select Committee will know and honourable members will know, the President in his State of the Nation address outlined the establishment of the PICC and also the establishment of a PICC Secretariat and Management Committee. And the Secretariat is headed by the Minister of Economic Development, and so the Department has played a supporting role for the Secretariat to the PICC in the development and coordination and the implementation of the National Infrastructure Plan. Through this work, we've developed 18 strategic implementation plans known as SIPs, which are located in different parts of the country, different provinces, and with a strong focus on regional development. Moving on to funding development, we saw the alignment of the IDC's activities with the new growth path and a major increase in its resourcing of development projects. During the year that we're reporting on, we embarked on the process of consolidating SUMUP and COOLA and the small business lending operations of the IDC, and this led to the establishment of CEFA, the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, on the 1st of April of this year. The implication of this consolidation meant that we've been able to double the resources available to small businesses and expansion in the kinds of funding provided and the provincial footprint of activities. As part of its work and in the current financial year, CEFA have embarked on a process of setting a footprint in every district of the country. And in the next financial year, we will come and report on the work of CEFA. And in fact, tomorrow, Honourable Chair, CEFA will be here at the IDC to report to your committee on the work that they've done to date since the establishment. Moving on to support for investment and employment, we had engagements around the takeover of Massmart by Walmart, ensuring sensitivity to employment, and colleagues will know that by now the Competition Appeal Court has made a ruling on this matter, and so hopefully the issue around this has been resolved. The CANSA intervention led to job guarantees and commitment for additional industrial capacity. See, a major part of the work of the department and the ministry was around the social accords. As we've reported previously, 4 accords were signed between the key stakeholders: the National Skills Accord, the Basic Education Accord, the Local Procurement Accord, and the Green Economy Accord. The National Skills Accord, which was signed on the 13th of July 2011, set targets for government, SMEs, and the private sector to expand training and internships and to support the seekers and the EDT sector. The Basic Education Accord, which was also signed on the 13th of July last year, provides for stakeholders to support individual schools in poor communities in line with agreed timeline guidelines. The Local Procurement Accord was signed on the 31st October 2011, and this accord commits government, SOEs, and the private sector to expand the procurement of locally produced goods and services so as to maximize employment creation and deepen industrial capacity, with a target set of 75% local procurement. The Green Economy Accord was signed on the 17th November 2011. The accord promotes the greening of the economy, including increased production of renewable energy, the installation of solar water heaters on a mass scale, and energy efficiency through appropriate regulations, investments, and collective action by the various stakeholders. Chair, the social, we're currently doing a review of the implementation of the social accords, and maybe once that report is completed and approved, we can come and report on the implementation of the accords and the work done to date. Moving on to our work around spatial development.
Oh, that works okay.
Yes, Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just need your guidance. Of course, we've experienced in the past, if we go word by word in the presentation, it can take quite a while and we won't then get the opportunity to raise issues that also reflected on this. So what I suggest is that we rather go faster through the presentation to give the members the opportunity also to ask questions later. Or maybe put a time frame to the input by the officials.
Yeah, I think with the presentation, Mr. Marvis, you can highlight, summarize and highlight key areas, where it's necessary.
Okay.
We do experience that time frame is a bit limited.
Sure, Chair, we'll do that. So I'm going to go through it quite quickly and not cover all the areas in the slides, but and if there are any questions, we can deal with it during question time. So Chair, we've done quite a bit of work around spatial development, working with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and other departments to identify projects in the well-served 23 municipal districts. We've developed a coherent, integrated and spatial approach to development, and we've also developed a training program for officials from municipalities and provinces. We had a number of conferences and platforms on the NGP, on inequality, on asset and inequality, and I'm not going to go through the details of that. Some examples of our achievements. As at the end of October, a total of 262,000 solar water heaters have been rolled out. The department chairs a steering committee comprising of a number of government departments, ESCOM, DBSA and the IDC, in terms of the rollout of the solar water heaters. The IDC created 45,900 jobs from investments and loans, and the IDC has also been involved in the RFP around the green economy and the renewable energy initiative and won 3 bids in relation to wind farms. And we've also supported the Rise Up Cooperative Bakery in the Western Cape, which contributed to empowerment, food security and jobs. Okay, moving on to the key performance indicators in relation to the APP, the main challenges that we face is that the targets in the APP often do not adequately reflect new tasks that arise as conditions change during the year. And as I mentioned earlier, the work on the PICs in particular was not foreseen in the APP of 2010-11 due to Cabinet resolving the matter in July of 2011. And so the audited outcomes in this year's report therefore somewhat understate our achievements. Moving to the program structure, that's an overview of the department, and I'm not going to go into the details. Moving on to the support of the PICC. The PICC is critical for implementation of the new growth path, but the PICC was only established in the second half of 2011. And it is therefore not included as a separate program in the APP or the budget. Some PICC achievements included as part of our branch work, and the next couple of slides outlines a more holistic overview. I've dealt with quite a number of those issues earlier on in the presentation, so I'm not going to go through our support for the secretariat and the work that we do and the support staff and the technical support that we give as a department. Going on to some of the key achievements, the work of the PICC structures to develop a national infrastructure plan, which was adopted in the first quarter of 2012. It included the development of an integrated needs assessment, the identification of existing projects as well as gaps and potential for synergy and ways to increase developmental impact. Processes required intensive collaboration across spheres of government and departments, and the EDD helped to coordinate expertise from relevant functions from across the state. I've covered the issue of the 70 SIPs that were identified. More than 150 projects have been identified and documented in an infrastructure booklet. We've done costing of the key programs and also done a skills audit on engineers and other scarce skills in the public sector. I'm going to move on, Chair, and then go to the economic policy development branch. The branch, the purpose of the work of the branch is to strengthen the economic development policy capacity of government. The objectives and measures are covered next. I'm not going to go through all of it, Chair, but it's outlined on slide 25. Moving on to the progress and the achievements around policy, we've done regular analysis of key economic trends, risks and opportunities provided as part of the outcome for quarterly reports, and this is done together with National Treasury and the Department of Trade and Industry. We've done a detailed assessment of progress on the new growth path, which was presented to the July 2011 Cabinet Lakota and led to the adoption of critical interventions by Cabinet, which included the establishment of the PICC. We also did two surveys on the impact on employment of state activity by national and provincial departments, and this was done together with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. The surveys were backed up by a detailed research paper commissioned by Development Policy Research Unit of UCT on the role of the state in employment creation. And these reports were made available to the Cabinet Mahotla on the key findings. Sector inputs, amongst others, were on iron and steel, the Eastern Cape auto industry, scrap metals, the retail industry, infrastructure inputs, the mining value chain in the Eastern Cape, Limpopo and the Northern Cape, the production of rolling stock and the dairy industry. We also did an assessment of broad-based BE codes from the standpoint of the NGP. We researched commissioned on the impact of the BE codes on listed companies. We also drafted a document on a multi-pronged strategy for youth employment, which was discussed in the cluster at the end of 2011 and tabled in NEDLAC for preliminary discussions with stakeholders in early 2012. And that work is currently continuing with the various stakeholders, youth, business, labor, government, are all considering the proposals around a youth strategy for employment. We also finalized a data analysis on gender and NGP and on inequality. And we've also commenced an initial study towards the establishment of an economic development index by staff members and TIPS. Honourable Chairperson and members, we moving on to policy inputs and analysis. The development of guidelines, social economic impact assessment systems with Presidency and Treasury was embarked upon. Terms of reference have been developed for an organizational study of the Economic Development Institute. We've dealt with the policy platforms earlier, so I'm not going to go into all of that. The next slide on page 32 basically covers our work with provincial and local stakeholders and government. and we report here on a quarterly basis, quarter 1, 2, 3, and 4. I'm not going to go into the details, but we basically outline the areas of work that we've done in both provinces and at local government level, or at local level, and the stakeholders, including government departments that we've engaged with. Moving on to economic planning and coordination, the purpose of this branch is to develop economic planning proposals and the green economy, as well as providing oversight over the DFIs and ERBs. The APP objectives and measures, we submitted proposals to the National Planning Commission, Cabinet and provinces. We coordinated and developed sector plans for key sectors. We developed proposals for harmonizing national, provincial and local economic development plans. We developed spatial economic development action plans and exercised policy strategy and budgetary oversight over the DFIs and ERPs. And we developed a strategy to enhance investment for economic development. A number of papers were developed on procurement and expenditure to enhance government's developmental priorities. We promoted South Africa's international relations strategy and economic development by engaging with regional and international agencies and multilateral institutions. We've done work around the green economy. We've worked on the agro-processing sector by coordinating government and private sector players, including the establishment of a dedicated fund to support enhanced competitiveness. Looking at the finance, development finance and SME support, the establishment of a business hub for SMEs within SAICA, that's the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. We've had a number of engagements with DTI and Treasury around the department's 30-day payment deadlines for SMEs. As a department, we pay within 15 to 18 days, and National Treasury have issued stronger regulations around the 30-day payment plan. This has been a major issue, Honourable Chair, for Cabinet, and in fact, Cabinet and FOSSA have dealt with this substantively over the last couple of months in order to ensure that all departments of government pay within 30 days. We also have quarterly meetings with our entities. We saw the establishment of CIFA, which I spoke about earlier. And moving on to special financing. With regard to the IDC, approvals increased from 11.5 billion for the financial year 2010 to 18.8 billion in the financial year 2012. And disbursements increased from 6.5 billion to 8.5 billion. And through the work of the IDC, a total of 45,000 jobs were either created or saved. And part of the IDC's work during the current financial year is to look at how it can spread its financing to different provinces in our country. There were also transfers to Samaf and Kula totaling 223 million rand, and the UIF IDC bond for companies in distress totaled 343 million rand, and the IDC raised a jobs bond of 2 billion rand. Under planning, a key part of the work focused on spatial development. Firstly, work around support for the PICC, particularly assistance with coordination for SIP 6 and 11. I've reported on the work with rural development and land reform, and then also identifying priority projects in the 23 worst SIP districts. Reviews of the socio-economic development strategy were also done of the King Sabata Dalinyebo Presidential Initiative, the Northern Cape Provincial Growth and Development Strategy, and the IDP of the Rensburg local municipality in the Northern Cape. We also did a review of the Standerton the Lekwa municipality area with a view to facilitate establishment of a soybean and sunseed oil crushing plant by a private investor in that municipality, and support for the special action plan for the Doringbay municipality. We spoke about support for the Rice Up Bakery cooperatives along the west coast, and we've also assisted with the draft framework for the revitalization of Atlantis. Chair, we've also been involved in the LINMEX, which are jointly convened by the Economic Development Department and the Department of Trade and Industry. And here we broadly outline when those meetings were held, both technical and political mix, and issues that were covered at those meetings. Moving on to local procurement, the engagement with the DTI and National Treasury led to the adoption of regulations to support local procurement and first round designations. A number of meetings were held, and the type of commitments required by different sectors were agreed upon. Meetings with the South African Bureau of Standards led to the development of the technical standards for local content, and we also reached agreement with Proudly South Africa to expand its efforts. And we also increased local procurement of stationery by EDD. Moving on to the green economy, I reported on the steering committee that is chaired by the department, and our main task is to ensure the implementation of the 1 million solar water heater by 2014. We worked with the IDC to support business financing for renewable energy generation in terms of the target set out in the integrated resource plan as developed by the Department of Energy. We've collaborated with the IDC and the Development Bank of South Africa on the publication of the Green Jobs Report in November of last year. We participated fully in the COP17, and workshops were held with the Western Cape accounting agencies on the green economy. We also had input and comments on the auto-catalytic converters and diesel particulate filters implementation plan, and a number of interdepartmental meetings on the green economy was held during the year that we're reporting on. Moving on to African regional development, we gave support to the tripartite summit between the regional economic communities of SADC, the East African Community, and the Common Market for Eastern and Southern Africa. The Minister acted as spokesman director at the launch of the Free Trade Agreement talks, and we also participated in the development of infrastructure in the North-South Corridor, which is a regional initiative scaled by our President. Again, Chair, under the work of the planning branch, we report on our engagements and work with provincial and local government and sectors. We report on it per quarter. I'm not going to go through it. We outline the engagement processes and the kind of issues we've been dealing with those sectors and provinces and local government municipalities. So if I can then move on to slide 50, which deals with economic development and dialogue. And the purpose is to promote social dialogue and build capacity among social partners, as well as implement strategic frameworks, which covers the four social accords which I've already reported on. In terms of the APP objectives and measures, the department convening national and social dialogue forums on a regular basis, facilitating social pacts at national level in the workplace within and within sectors, facilitate, monitor and report on the implementation of the framework agreements and the social pacts. We hosted learning events for economic development learning networks, and we also hosted a number of other conferences and also convened the economic advisory panel of the minister. I've dealt with the four social accords that we've dealt with and the role that the department played in giving support to the negotiations through the secretariat services. and then also on the work that we've been able to do with the various parties and on blocking, addressing blockages that have occurred in giving effect to those social accords. Chair, the next slide deals with our work in as part of giving effect to the national accords, and I'm not going to go into the details, but colleagues can go through that. We also embarked on a major program of capacity building with provinces and regions and local government. We held workshops on the NGP and social accords in 7 provinces, 4 capacity building workshops on the social accords for labour were held in 4 provinces, and we also participated in a panel on jobs at the Sedusa Congress in November last year, and initial work was undertaken on setting up knowledge networks for the department. Looking at our sectoral and workplace achievements, we gave support for the Western Cape Furniture Industry Pilot Project, meetings with the Western Cape provincial representatives and stakeholders on ways to support the clothing industry in the second half of last year, support for the Isiteri plan to set up a garment factory in KZN, and social dialogue and capacity building with the metals and engineering industry bargaining council. Also gave support for the Dimbaza foundry. We also made an intervention to save jobs at a major company in the forestry value chain, where initially more than 1,200 jobs were at risk of being shed. It involved meetings with the CCMA stakeholders and officials and saved half of the jobs that were at risk. An intervention was also undertaken that secured more affordable labor for a cooperative that manufactures school shoes for needy children. So moving on to productivity and our achievements through that, we developed a productivity concept document. We signed an MOU with Productivity SA to strengthen collaboration and cooperation to fast-track government's productivity initiatives. A number of sessions were held with NEDLAC constituencies to get their views on productivity, and we also had a number of meetings with the ILO, South South African Organized Business and Labor and Community Representatives to follow up the initial sessions. We also then give a breakdown of the engagements that our dialogue branch was involved in and what it the issues that we dealt with. And I've covered at a very high level those areas in the presentation. Chair, moving on to corporate governance. All reporting requirements had been met by the Economic Development Department in terms of the year that we're reporting on. We have received good audit results. We have regular meetings of our management committee, our EXCO, and our internal audit committee, and we continued the development of corporate governance systems and policies, including on human resources, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, entertainment, the use of mobile phones and communication devices, petty cash, subsistence and travel allowance, and facilities management. We also held a number of workshops for our staff on strategic planning, risk management, and fraud control. Chair, I'm going to hand over to our Chief Director for Human Resources to report on our work around human resources over the past 12 months, and then I will make some concluding comments on the performance part of the annual report. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair and honourable members. As far as human resources are concerned, as that during this particular period, we had 107 officials that have been appointed, and 8 had accepted offers of employment. The vacancy, overall vacancy rate was 13.2%, and in terms of representativity, 60% of senior managers and 3/4 of senior professionals in mission management were women. The African, 28% of senior managers and 45% of senior professionals in mental management were women as well. The department had 1 disabled employee. That's actually 1% of total, as opposed to the target of 2%. But maybe I must also hasten to indicate that we are working towards ensuring that all these issues that are addressed, more so that the issue of vacancy rate as well. And the next slide is the summary of the tables in terms of the percentages, the program, and the number in terms of the vacancy rate that we had. And in terms of the following table as well, is the representativity in terms of gender, as well as race, as well as levels as well. And thank you very much.
Chair and honourable members, in concluding the performance part of this presentation, employment creation and growth were intact in the last fiscal year, but new risks have emerged internationally and locally. The department's activities contributed to the core achievements by government, and in the current year, we will accelerate efforts to respond to the global crisis, especially through the National Infrastructure Plan and regional development. We will accelerate our efforts to address inequality, especially in the workplace, as well as through employment creation, and the department's focus will continue to shift from policy development to supporting and coordinating implementation. Honourable Chair and members, that concludes the presentation on the performance part of the annual report. Chair, if we can move on to the annual financial statements, and the CFO will assist me with this part of the presentation. The information presented is based on the 2011-2012 audited annual financial statements. The presentation will basically cover expenditure, auditor general processes, the Committee on Public Accounts resolutions, the 2011-2012 budget process, the overall expenditure per program, and then the overview of revenue payments, and then some concluding comments. Going on to the overview of expenditure, our expenditure was up by 44% compared to the previous financial year. The total adjusted budget for 2011-2012 financial year was 598.4 million, an increase of 33% compared to the previous financial year. Expenditure for 2011-2012 was 577.6 million, 97% of the adjusted appropriation, compared to 400.6 million or 89% in 2010-2011. Excluding transfers, expenditure was 89.6 million or 81% of the adjusted appropriation of 110.4 million compared to 44.2 million rand, 48% in 2010-2011. 2011-2012 was the department's second full year of operation as a separate boat. We still have challenges and have experienced challenges in recruiting suitably qualified and experienced staff, and the compensation of employees is a major cost driver which accounts for lower expenditure. Honourable members, moving on to the Auditor General processes. The Economic Development Department maintains the status of an unqualified audit report by the Auditor General of South Africa. The AG raised only one non-compliant matter, and that is one of material misstatements of expenditure. When the AG does the audit, they picked up that one of our line items was incorrectly placed in, and therefore it became a material misstatement. And during the course of the audit, the department is able to correct that, and as we say, we subsequently corrected it by the department. The one non-compliance matter is a reduction from the previous years from six non-compliance issues as I've reported. The AG's report suggests that ED is also free from the following forms of undesirable expenditures. We did not have any irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The AG also had a number of interactions with the minister as the executive authority and with the accounting officer, and the dates are outlined in the slide. At these meetings, commitments were made to address improvements in the internal control environment with the objective of achieving clean administration. The AG also had a number of meetings for the internal audit committee, and during the process of conducting the audit, the AG set up a steering committee together with a department which was headed by the chief financial officer of the department, together with a team of EDD officials and the auditor general. On the implementation of the commitments that the executive authority and the accounting officer made to the AG and the recommendation, the AG's assessment of the progress on commitments made by the Minister, Accounting Officer and the Audit Committee to address audit outcomes in both 2010-11 and 2011-2012. There are three areas of commitments: the development and implementation of an HR plan with a view to meeting the HR needs of the department. That plan was developed and implemented and approved by the Minister. The improvement of payment process to ensure that payments are made within 30 days, and as I reported earlier, we now pay within 15 to 18 days, and processes regarding the declarations of interest will be improved, and we can report that all declarations have been received for audit, and the issue has thus been resolved. Moving on to the Committee on Public Accounts Resolution. The department has never appeared before the Committee on Public Accounts, and there are no resolutions from this committee for the department to implement. Moving on to the budget process, and I'm going to now ask the Chief Financial Officer to rest of the presentation. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mulva. The Chairperson, Honourable Members, DG, ladies and gentlemen. The year that we are currently reporting on basically started on a budget process that unfolded. A strategic session was held to look at what needed to be done, and during that strategic session, the former DG chaired, Professor Levine, and we were then addressed by the minister, who shared with us his political priorities that we needed to factor in the planning process. We adhered to the National Treasury guidelines, and they are the ones who give guidelines. And during the process, we had conducted an analysis of our historical spending. What we also did, we looked at the cost drivers that actually form our spending. We identified them. So our budget was not only based on an aggregation process. We looked at the cost drivers per unit. We then ended up formulating a E&E chapter, which formed part of the E&E document, and it was tabled. And I must indicate that the budget is informed by the strategic plan, which is a 5-year document that was tabled by the Minister in Parliament. And it is also aligned to the APP as well as the organizational structure. And these are the spending items that are basically our cost drivers. And the budget is usually formulated, making sure that we highlight on those. And I must indicate that the total budget of the department was 595 million. It was tabled. I will move over to the expenditure. The department, as I have indicated, had an initial appropriation amount of 595. It ended up with a final appropriation of 598 million, and this is after adjustment budget as well as post-adjustment requirements. and the total, the amount of spend by the department was basically 578, which represents 97% of the budget. Excluding transfers, it represents 81%. And that budget was basically 89.6 million. Sorry, it was 129.7 main appropriation, and the final appropriation was 110, and we only spent 89.6 or 81%. The next slide, I will then take us through the individual program. The information has been availed to members, so I'm not going to go down to those individuals. Even the it's contained in the financial statement, but all I can say that program one, we only spent 88% of the final appropriation of 57.6 or 50.8 million. Whereas program two, we spent, and the reason for underspending program one, by the way, is mainly underspending due to not having spent capital money on capital assets, which is informed by the rate at which posts are filled. In program two, policy, we started with a budget of 24 million, and we had an adjustment budget of 16 final, of which 77% or 12.5 was spent. Program 3, we also had a budget. Program 3, I'm going to break it into two, because this is where we're transferring entities. Remember, the department during the financial year had a number of entities that we were transferring, which we still continue funds to. So including transfers, the main appropriation was 502, excluding transfers. Including transfers, the main appropriation was 502, and excluding transfers, we had in the region of 22 million. And we spent 501, which represents 100% budget spending almost. So we did not state the reason for either was spending or underspending, because we had 100% spending. Right. The last program, we spent 62% of the final budget, of which the final budget was 21.3 million, and we only spent 13 from that one, from that program. These are the programs, entities that report to the Minister of Economic Development, and in terms of the Act, you also have to do some administrative work to make sure that they comply, but also the work that you do supports what the department needs to do. So we've transferred in total 468 million, and these are the entities that I know that honorable members are familiar. I must also indicate that we transferred everything that was intended to be transferred, so there is no underspending. The next step of transfer are the entities that the special advisor to the minister alluded to on projects that were highlighted. Those projects are all included in the performance, and we spent in the region of 20 million, and that is from South Africa as well as SAICA. Revenue, department collects significant amounts of revenue, and this revenue are mainly generated from two entities. One, Competition Commission penalties that were confirmed by tribunal, as well as the dividends from IDC, because government, the department, the minister is the 100% shareholder of IDC. So we collected more than what we had planned to collect. So it shows that the work of the Competition Commission is indeed trying to deal with a lot of wrong things that are being done out there. And I must indicate that this money that are collected, the 593 million, is not available for use by the department. It immediately gets surrendered over to the fiscal, the National Revenue Fund, and it will be withdrawn according to the Appropriation Act. Lastly, let me indicate that the department averagely paid its suppliers within 15 days. We expected by the legislation to pay, regulations to pay at least within 30 days. In fact, maximum is 30 days. So I think we are doing very well. I need to indicate that we felt that it was worth mentioning to tell this August committee that we have reduced our accruals at the end by 88%, which we believe that it's actually an indicator that we continue to procure prudently and based on the plan. And we continue to procure goods and services, use the state resources that are scarce and that have been taken from people's taxes economically, efficiently, and in an efficient manner. But I can also guarantee the committee that we are also procuring equitably. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson and members, in concluding the presentation, we just want to report that both the executive authority and as acting DG, we are committed to continuous improvements on internal controls, ensuring that the department obtains a clean audit report, that we continue to meet the Auditor General on a regular basis, and that we commence with an income audit in October 2012. Chair, just to indicate that the new DG, DG Schreiner, has met the Auditor General, and we've gone through the commitments that were made, and we've also agreed on the process for the interim audit that will commence now in November. During the course of the audit and the year that we're reporting on, the AG was complementary in the way in which the department had managed its work, and given the clean audit that we received, they thought it would be good to do an interim audit commencing in November, which when in February, March next year, when they do the final audit, a lot of the work would have been done. I think the key issue is to note that there will be regular interaction between the Executive Authority and Director General with the AG and the Internal Audit Committee to ensure that we continue the good work around governance issues and managing the department in the way that we have. So to firstly thank the Select Committee and Honourable Chairperson for giving us the opportunity to thank the DG. We agreed that I will do the presentation, and the team who made it possible to achieve the clean audit that we have. Thank you very much.
DG, anything you want to add?
I think perhaps just to reinforce the commitments made in the last slide, and the commitments also on the performance reporting part. We are moving into our mid-year planning processes in the next couple of weeks. So we will certainly be picking up on issues that we have realized from the reporting process going forward. But most importantly, I think the basis that has been laid in the partnership with the AG to be able to ensure that we maintain the good governance in this process. That commitment certainly is reinforced. Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi. Thank you. Ex-acting DG Special Advisor, Mr. Mauser, for tabling of the report. Honourable members, it's now over to you. Honourable Nambi, Honourable Valmere, Honourable Evans, Evans, Van Lingen, Honourable Sinclair, in that order. Honourable Gandhi.
Chair, let me join you and welcome the presentation that has been done this morning. Yeah, it's really good if ever we have an unqualified report, but not only that, but at times as members of different provinces, you might have realized the DG and the team that we're not introducing ourselves. We're not just saying I'm Jomo Nyambe. I said Jomo Nyambe, Umaya. And the other one says Boko, the other one says Free State. It's really because without maybe taking much of your time, Chair, but simply to emphasize the point that the difference between this select committee and the portfolio committee is that we are representing the interests of provinces. So, as per the constitution. So, maybe to raise that in the future, because if you go through the report, you'll find that it's very specific about what you have done to provinces, but in some other instances, it's not specific. But coming to the presentation today, at no stage where you were specific about what you were doing in provinces. So it's making it simple for us as members of parliament coming from different provinces. Once you have a slide, once you say there was a capacity building in seven provinces, and then you indicate those provinces. So it's simple for us to engage about the two that are out. And if ever there's something we have done in two provinces, then we have to discuss the issue of the seven. But once you are specific, it's simple for us as select committee representing the interest of provinces without getting to the big report. That's the first one. The second one is in relation to the programs that we are having. Maybe a comment from the team that the PG and the presenter. Don't you think is there a need for a new program to be initiated? Are you satisfied with the programs that we are having? That they are really assisting us as a country to address the current challenges that we are facing. The other one is about the issue of the capacity building costs that we are running with the feds, that is above 3 million. Linked to local government. If you can try to do a little bit of explanation about that so that we can have a better understanding, maybe I can come back later today to have some question about it. In the previous financial year, Chair, I'm not convinced, I might not be that good when it comes to analytics, but to have one person living with disability in a department and say it's representing 1%, I don't think it's a correct reflection. Clarify that one. Is it really 1% reflecting 1%? Then the last one, Chair, is about the internal audit. It said you had a challenge in terms of capacity. So it was, yes, you're using the word consort towards the end of the financial year. Can you explain that part so that I can see whether my understanding of the consort is the same with what you are trying to present to us? We are commending the good work, especially when it comes to the issue of paying in less than 3 days. It's a serious improvement on what was happening previously, and we are giving credit to it too. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Nami, Honorable Gamere.
Thank you, Chair. Also wish to add the word in welcoming the new DG. Say you are feeling another size of a shoe coming to a department that has been having unqualified audit reports. We patiently wait for next year's outcome, and that will reflect on our performance. Secondly, to thank the department that in most cases when we go out for oversight, the department does send some officials with us. which is very good and answers. I've got quite a list of questions. First one on the priorities of government. I would have loved to hear how many jobs were made possible by the department as instructed by the President in the State of the Nation address. Actually says all departments and agencies will contribute to job creation. Now the department would always say they'll make conditions, they won't create jobs, but there are ways. Now piggybacking on what Honorable Nyami said, you can target certain jobs, like jobs for people with disabilities, and easily have 10%. We are available. In terms of English, my second language, now I want to get this. Is it solar water heaters or solar water geysers? So that, you know, I get myself correct. There is a, on the issue of a national campaign on buying locally, let me rephrase this. In an area where I come from, KwaZulu Natal, there's an area which you all don't know, which is Gingindlovu. If I were to go to Gingindlovu with the presentation and call in a community meeting, would people hear me what the government is saying? Would I be responding to what the people want to see? Would I be able to tell the people that the government is doing this for you? Or it will be the, it can only be heard by maybe people who are in Cape Town and Sandton. That's the issue that is what we're saying, talking to what the people want. There was also a promise that you're proudly South African, will provide the list of local products. Is it available? Who has it? I've never seen that list. So it was an agreement between EDD and probably South Africa. And do people know about this thing in South Africa? Because we took a decision on the level of origin. It shouldn't just show that we're making an agreement and people don't know what's happening. The other issue is the issue of engagement with provincial and local governments. Our experience in our oversight is that more especially local government, there is no alignment with what the department is doing and what local government is doing. That's why they contribute more when they go with us on oversight. It looks like it's the first time, you know, they get this thing. So is there any alignment of seriousness, especially at the local government? I was impressed when I looked at the financial state. What we call staff debt. Staff debt. There's some staff debt that is said there. You've got some overpayment of salaries and so on. I wish I could work in this department. That's a constant overpayment of salaries. Another question is why, you know, you talk of SMME support, and I cannot find an alignment because you then talk of FIICA, the thing for chartered accountants, and you only target them. How do they fit in on SMMEs? Because these are individuals, chartered accountants, they train them, and so what's the contribution on SMMEs, and why target them only? And how far has CIFA, in this case you can particularly say Samaf Kula and the IDV on the SMMEs, how far have they gone in assisting rural SMMEs? That is why it is that we are interested in provinces. I would have loved to hear that, you know, in KwaZulu-Natal, this is what happened there, this is what happened. And what is the actual, you know, I found the statement to be general, what is the actual EDD's contribution to the 23 districts that are in distress? We do have a few. in KwaZulu Natal. But what is the main contribution of EDD? What do they do? How do they assist them? And also there was a mention of the Istebe plan in KwaZulu Natal. What support is there? Is the garment factory operational? What form of support did you give it? Unfortunately, that factory is about 25 kilometers from where I stay. As Honorable Nyambi asked, where and in which provinces were NGP social dialogues held? I'll be interested in hearing where did you hold them in KwaZulu Natal and in rural areas. Another budget, why do you fail to fill posts that's not spending 100%? I think we're trying to balance as a country. There's huge unemployment, there are unemployed graduates, a huge pool of them, and you cannot fill posts. We offer our services, I'm sure, this committee, the people that you need, we can get them. There are millions of people there that are qualified that can fill these programs. On your program 4, am I correct in saying there are few staff members? If so, what are the skills that are needed that you cannot get? I don't think that's a specialty program, that one. I think I'll stand and do some follow-up. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Kamene. Honourable Abrams.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'd also like to add to the welcome and congratulations to the DG, especially to the women, so we know they're thinking to work out properly. Thank you. I'd like to know, I don't know if I'm the only one that missed, it sounds like my first meeting I attended, Chairperson, where I was busy scribbling and paging through the document, finding the acronym. There's been so many. If you can just please let us have a list of them. I've written down a few like SIPs and PIPs and DFIs and ERBs, and some of them I haven't heard before, and maybe they are somewhere in the book, if we can just have a list of them. And all the one that came up, I don't know if I've heard it before, Makotla, I know about Lakotla, is Makotla for the ministers. but there's so many, if we can have a list, please. Then I'd also like to know on the EDD supported Rise Up for Co-op, what sorts of support have you given the co-op, and then also do you have any mentorship programs? Because I always say that if there's any co-op that's going to survive, it's for mentorship. You can't go to any co-op and don't have the experience or mentor assisting you with the program. Then it was also mentioned of the 23 worst districts. Sort of project was identified here? It was like special areas, in which of this is the 23 worst districts in the area? And then the interesting, I'm sitting here as a proudly South African, and I'm pretty disturbed to hear that African. I think I'm an African. I know I am an African. Why is the term used African and not black? Why are we running away from the word black, South Asian and white? I'm sitting here wondering, do I belong here because I'm an African, and there's no denial about it. I am an African. Proudly African woman. Is it for equity purposes? Because when you go to any other area, even the constitution is quoted, you're black or you're white. And when it suits us, we want to call ourselves African. But it's not debatable for me. I am an African. I think I'll rest for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Fanyan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Congratulations to our new DG. And thank you to the team that made the department stand up and grow over the last few years. It has not always been easy, I know. Sometimes you people move a bit slowly. And sometimes we don't see, and sometimes you don't understand, and so on. But thank you, it's been, and it's good seeing you again. I would like to start off by wanting to ask, is this the exact presentation that you did to the NA committee? In other words, word for word, you just made more copies for us. But I've got to agree with my colleague, Honorable Yami, that we work in provinces, and I can't see how the provinces fit into this. It's very difficult. Then when we look at the availability of the report, Chairperson, you know, when I was a councillor in Kasawi District Municipality, we used to take our papers and put them on the scale, and they were 7 kilograms, but we got the 7 kilograms a week before the time. I don't know how many kilograms this is, but a fine print. And I got mine in my mailbox this morning. I flew in late last night. So it's absolutely impossible to pay tribute or to investigate the department properly. We do also need more information on the provinces. And then I would like to ask about the AG's comments on point 15, 16 and 17. Although you've got to be in order, it sounds fantastic, but then he gets a bit tough on those last 3 points, and I think maybe we must talk a little bit more about that. You say you're paying within 15 days, yet it's fantastic. If we can get that through to all the departments and to all state entities, I think you as the Economic Development Department will understand that government, especially local government, who does not pay within 30 days and actually destroys SMMEs in the economic sector. Your procurement turnaround time is what worries me. Does that happen quick enough? Do you get the required result that you have to get? And then there was a comment from the CFO where he said he couldn't spend his capital expenditure because it was related to staff, etc. That really worried me. The CFO, I think it was the CFO that also said that you're having problems getting qualified staff. That worries me because I'm sure there's enough qualified people in South Africa. So I don't understand what the problem is. When we look at the overall picture of this document, it's a register of what you have done, and you've ticked all the boxes, and the meetings that you've attended, and the seminar that you've attended, and so on. And it's plan and policy development. But now 3 years into this department, this new department, What are we actually achieving on the ground? So, you know, normally when a department comes to us, they say, that's the legislation, that's the policies, and that is what we're doing in our provinces. And here it's sort of very much scattered around, almost like somebody rolling over money and it's a little bit easier, Makar, and I don't want you to see what's really happening. Although we firmly believe that you know exactly what's going on here, and that you have been working very hard. You talk about municipal assistance, and we would like to see that analysis of how it is presented in the provinces, in the municipalities, and the cost to those municipalities, because you understand that we do a lot of oversight work on the ground. And we can then go and say, and think about a municipality in KSD, in the Eastern Cape, is a naughty one. So we have to keep an eye on them all the time because we know there's a problem. And we can't if we don't know exactly what the project was and how you have spent money. When you talk about the establishment of a green economy fund, fantastic, and we just need more info on that. You talk about agro-processing, we need more info on that. A business hub for SMMEs with an Institute of Chartered Accountants, that's very interesting, and we need info on that. And then you were talking about the MINMEG of September 2011, aligning provincial work program to the 12 action plans. Now that's a very interesting statement that you've made, and I'd really like more detail on that. And perhaps you know, it's a long story, you would rather give it to us in writing than comment on it here, but it's been very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair. Yeah, Chair, yes, did you welcome? I think you, after this you will really feel welcome, everybody who has said that. Chair, fortunately I said from the beginning, and I'm going to say it because after this today I'm even more convinced of my original viewpoint. We don't need this department. We don't need this department. We don't need the minister in. The minister is not here to defend himself. I challenged him from the beginning, and after this today, as I say, I'm more convinced that, we don't need PEDD. In this report, there's many instances where this department is masquerading on behalf of other departments. Energy, I see there's nice photos of alternate energy, agriculture, and so on and so forth. So with that as viewpoint, I tend to remain critical in terms of value for money and what we're getting out of the department. So the DC's got the work cut out. Unfortunately, the previous two or so, the formal one and the acting one, couldn't change that perception around. And Chair, really, I don't know why many of these responsibilities that's reflected here can be placed under either Trade or Industry, National Planning Commission, or one of what is Mr. Colin Chavani's performance and monitoring. I really, please convince me, I want to be convinced. But yeah, then Chair, coming to the issue about the NCOP, you will certainly know very soon that you will realize that although we feel in this committee, we will engage you purely on a constituency base, but also in terms of our provinces. And just to answer Honourable Fundamental's question, this is just a copy and paste. If you see it, page 7, it says the portfolio committee, so you didn't even bother to check the name. This is a REC committee, it's got a different, so, different mandate. Now, coming then to the specifics there, in the report on the entities, page 46, the Competition Commission. Now, there's a lot of activity with the Competition Commission, and I think many of them are right. But the critical issue that I want to raise, what was the outcome of the Constitutional Court's ruling regarding the issues that's been referred there? You just stop on page four, top of 48, you said you referred to a specific appeal there, but there's no outcome. What does the Constitutional Court rule on those specific cases? Because there's some that got the implication on my province, the one about Geelkaap, the co-op and the fertilizer and so on. Personally, I don't think that the intention of Geelkaap was so bad that at the end it should have been stopped by the Competition Commission. But I think it's more about the principle, and it seems that these commissions these days, with due respect to them, interfere in matters that they actually don't have a mandate over. Then on page 59, it's just a technical question. Your audit committee, one of the members only attended one out of the four meetings. Now certainly there must be some discipline when you appoint professional people to these committees. What is the reason that the specific person only attended one out of the four audit committees? Then Chair, coming to the donor funding, page 68, there was a reflection on that. Now my first issue, DG, is the issue about the 39 million rand that was awarded to complete the planning for that alternate energy program. 39 million rand sounds a lot of money, or it seems a lot of money if you look at what they had to do. The studies included the basic engineering study and an EIA. 39 million rand on page 68 of the report. But then, the issue that's of the greatest concern to me is the one about that's reflected there at the horizon. I asked a question to the Minister of DTI, and the Minister of DTI wasn't available, and then the Minister of EDD responded on that question. Now, the Employment Creation Fund is a donor fund, mainly based from donations from the EU and I think other international agencies. But there's 1.3 billion rand available in that fund. 1.3 billion rand. Now, out of that 1.3 billion, according to the answer from the minister, there's still 700 million available. Now, what astounds me is that this department wants to come and boast about RiseUp. RiseUp is a co-op. It's a bakery set up based on co-ops that's been established in the Western Cape, on the West Coast in the Western Cape. RiseUp has been approved more than 15 months ago. And up till today, they're still struggling to get that funding. That RiseUp project has specifically been driven by this department. Now, we understand that the ECF fund is a combination of about four or five departments. Now, I don't know if the EDD is aware of that, DG, but the DG of the industry last week indicated that in all probability that ECF fund will be transferred to CTI. But that just proves my point. If that coordination is supposed to happen in this department, your department is failing. Because those co-ops has put many of them their lives at risk waiting for this funding to come out. And it's almost 15 months now. Actually, I really want to request your assistance with that matter so that it can be resolved. And that the DC gives us an urgent report about what is the status of that specific one. Then the other issue, Chair, is the one about the IEDC. There's a lot of reflection on the IEDC and money that's been distributed and not necessarily distributed, but where the IEDC buy equity in projects and so on. I think the critical question that needs to be asked, DG, is when will the IEDC, or let me rather rephrase it, would it be necessary that the IEDC at some stage be recapitalized to make it possible that the IEDC fulfills the developmental agenda role? Yeah, and then the last issue is the one about Northern Cape, Renosterberg IDP. Now, Renosterberg is one of the poorest areas in South Africa. We've been there, just next to the number 2 of dam. It's got a lot of potential, but unfortunately, like many municipalities, it's got serious managerial issues. I would rather think that given the fact that Renosterberg is very small, that the department must rather take a district approach and not a local municipality approach. That district, which is called Pixie Kasema, which has been there now, has been earmarked as one of the potential SEZs. And in terms of that, Renosterberg can still fit into that. But I think you must look at the bigger picture, also in terms of some of the objectives, which is to do with the green economy and so on and so forth. Yeah, so Chair, you know, I'm very positive. I'm from the Northern Cape. I look for rain where there's no rain. But I don't see any rain this department at the moment. I'm sorry to say it, but hopefully there will be a turnaround strategy.
Hello,
Familian,
then
I'm
Chairperson, he's also looking for governance in this country coming from COVID, but he's always talking about the next government. So anyway, he's a positive oak. Two things. He's just spoken about the Northerberg, and it was listed under, and I can't find it now, it was listed under spatial development. And I think all the municipalities do need spatial development plans. But this is IDP. So it's part of the ordinary annual budget process. It's not part of the spatial development process. And then my colleague and I have just been wondering whether our minister is now in Khoisan. Because if you look on page 21, under 1.3, it says Cabinet and Cabinet Committees, the second paragraph. Minister Pate, exclamation mark, and I can't click my tongue like that. And then there's another one also, a similar error on page 69. So I hate it when people cross the T's and dot the I's when a document has been published already, but on the lighter note, I was wondering whether he'd gone consent since he can't qualify the Africans. Thank you.
Honorable Ahmed.
Minister Khoisan. Just one question which I skipped. I don't know how. If the department can provide us with a list of beneficiaries of the, I know it is the jobs fund, but to refer to it as a jobs bond, I'm not sure it's the same thing. Spread it province-wise, but highlight KZN, because I'm requesting for it.
Thank you, Chief. Usually, I like to quote the late Steve Jeter's comment that you don't raise a fish for sea. So that Joseph has done a good job, is a job that he would do a good job. Because a fish, unless it swims, it sinks and it dies. So it's the same with this department or any other department. Certainly, I also like to echo the sentiments of Honorable Linge that I arrived this morning and also signed this document on my desk, so I didn't bother, honestly, to look through it because I was going to do any justice. However, I'll continue asking just a few questions. Based on what we usually do on a daily basis and what's happening in the country, in the world as such. One of the key issues in the National Development Plan, now is not officially probably being implemented in government these days, but is the mention that the economy is still in the former colonial structure. We haven't changed much of the economy since then. The colonized days. That is why we're not getting much jobs and getting people the employment. I just don't find out from the department in your economic division, economic policy planning division, what is your strategy, although vis-a-vis the NDP, of restructuring our economy so that we create more jobs, we don't continue perpetuating the trickle-down economy as in the past. Just on page 33, you're talking about 22 municipalities where the former homelands, you would like to put them into the mainframe of the economy. But you know that the homelands were actually banished to flat areas where there was, the land was not productive, it was not arable and the like. Now, what is the strategy of development as far as in the long term to bring these former homelands into the mainstream economy if the situation is such unfavorable conditions as far as arable land and agriculture percent? As a developing country, you know that we depend mostly on primary products, of which is agriculture, one of them is mining. My second point is on an issue on page 49, international trade and International Trade Administration Commission of South Africa, ITEC. We've got the more or less the same entity in DTI, ITEDE, International Trade and Economic Development, of which they are focusing mostly on the same issues, on tariffs, on regional education, and so forth. Now, my question is, isn't this a duplication of the same issues as you find in trade and economy, in trade and industry, DTI? Because they've got this division, and of which in the current financial year or in the present review, they've actually shifted about 24% of their funds to ITED. And when you look, at ITED, it's the trade and economic development. There are agreements there that were struck 15 years, 20 years ago, with those agreements we still depend on today, you know, like the eagles. My question is, when you deal with these issues, do you formulate your structures or you formulate policies in such a way that they conform to these agreements, or you make such a way that these agreements conform to our national objectives? The same question I asked in the DTI, you know, how do they structure their objectives and vis-à-vis these long agreements that were there struck, you know, years ago? And my last question is on page, I think it's page 33. It's on your dialogue. You've shown there that you attended 9 dialogues. You achieved 14. I think on page 42. You exceeded the target by 5. Broaden capacity building for economic development. I just took the one in the middle. Your site was 9 objectives, or the action was 14. The question is here, you've got these dialogues. You meet your target, or you officially overshot your target. The question is, after you left, is there any tangible thing that's happening on the ground from those dialogues? Are the good lives change for the better after the dialogue, or is that just talk show meetings, and thereafter people are still hungry for more information, for funds, are still hungry for projects, and every day nothing has happened? How do you measure then your impact as far as the dialogues are concerned? Thanks so much.
Thank you. DG and Mr. Malda has spoke at Fargan. For the interest of time, I think I'll send it to you in writing, then you can respond. But over to you to respond.
Perhaps let me start with some of the questions that relate to the issues of the audit and budget program structure and some of those types of issues. Let me start off by saying that we hear very clearly the concerns raised about the lack of detail on work in the provinces in terms of presentation, and we will certainly make sure going forward that we structure presentations to the select committee to enable that interaction. And in addition, we take on board the issue of getting documentation to the select committee timely, and we will put systems in place to ensure that. So our apologies on that score. The issue on budget program structure, I think what is very important for us to flag here is that needs to link to the organizational structure. I think that the Select Committee would be aware of the fact that there was an interim organizational structure and that work has been being done on trying to firm that up. And obviously that's an impact on how it structures the budget program. So I think that work that still needs to go forward as we move to implement a new organizational structure. How does that then enable the budget program structure? I think in the presentation as well, it was clear that there was responsibilities that were added to the mandate in a sense during that financial year that certainly weren't accommodated in the budget program structure. I thought that I should pick up on those. I think the other aspect that I want to pick up on, and I'm sure that HR will add in more detail, the concern about whether we are, the challenge about us being able to fill our vacancies. Certainly qualifications is one part of it, but I think that more than that, it's a question of getting the experience. And I think that requires us to then ensure that we put in place in the department a particular recruitment and retention strategy that enables us not only get people who've got the formal academic qualifications, but in addition to get the experience that is required in a department where a large part of what one is doing is coordinating and unblocking processes and being able to assist in driving those processes. I thought as a new kid on the block, I would just lift up those issues and then allow the relevant subject experts to deal with some of the other issues. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Honourable chair and members, thank you very much for all the comments and questions that have been put forward. I want to echo the DG's view that we note the concerns that the committee has raised, and we will definitely make sure that in future the presentation gives more detail to what work we are doing with the provinces and with the local government in particular and stakeholders. And that our understanding was that the annual report was submitted through the parliamentary process to members of the committee, but if that didn't happen, we apologize for that. But we will make sure that, as the DG said, in future, we will make sure that the honorable members get the documents early. Honorable Chair and members, I'm going to request that we have members of the team present, that they'll focus on and respond to the different issues. I'm going to ask the DG for policy, Dr. Neva Machetla, to respond to the economic related issues, the 23 poor area, the comments and questions around that. And maybe if we can start off with her, and then I'll ask Saul Levine, who's responsible for the DFI, to cover the areas of the IDC, SIFA, and the bits and capacity building issues. I'm going to ask the HR executive to Chief Director to respond to the HR related questions, and then I will come in to respond to the rest of the issues. So Neva, can you stop us, please?
I just want to make one suggestion, because we could probably send a follow-up report that breaks down activities by provinces quite easily, even possibly by municipality.
That's
a fact.
That would help us to create provinces plus municipalities.
Yeah. Okay. So I heard two questions that would be relevant to this. One is the issue about what we actually done around jobs. One was the issue about the sort of what are we doing to restructure the colonial economy, and in that context, what are we doing about the 23 worst-served districts? So what we've done around jobs, some of these things, as you said, are not quantifiable, although we would like to be able to quantify them. But I think the very direct things that maybe Saul can also talk to more is around the IDC, that they now do follow up with the employment impact of all their work. They figured in the last financial year, I think it's in the report, that they basically saved or created 45,000 jobs, which, remember, these are formal jobs, so there's the multiplier effect there, which is much larger. With CIFA, we've been unable to get the same kind of employment impact that we actually trust, but they are trying to work on it. I think we all agree that there is fairly obvious how you get the employment creation and improvements in livelihoods when you're successful in supporting small microenterprise and co-op. I think that the thing that is being critical in terms of both restructuring, which I'll come to, but employment creation, is around local procurement. I think there has been a sea change in government around local procurement. And I do think, despite what the honorable member said, that EP had quite a lot to do with that. I think that it's very much about getting departments to buy into it, but also then saying, what is the regulatory framework that will support that? And I think that it was important that through the policy changes, through the new growth path, there's been that recognition that where we as government focus more on local procurement, we have a greater stimulus impact on the economy, less leakage overseas from our expenditure, which particularly given the international slowdown is important at the moment. And then with the National Infrastructure Plan, I think that's likely to have a very big impact on employment creation, partially through the construction, but even more in terms of how it supports producers, both in the formal sector and emerging enterprise in impoverished regions. And the plan has been designed to try to keep both those aims and get a balance there. I think also if you look in the report, we do have a set of catalytic projects and unblocking projects that contribute directly to specific projects and deployment creation. So for instance, we're working on a biofuels project in the Eastern Cape, which these are big projects, so they take a long time to get into place. This is a 2 billion rand investment in a refinery, which could support 10 or 20,000 small-scale producers of canola. No, it's not our money, sorry. We're supporting a project, it's a private sector project. We're trying to help them in facilitating some of the approvals, access to infrastructure, and so on, and work with the Eastern Cape Department of Agriculture in terms of supporting smallholders ultimately to be able to provide input. So that's the thing, that's where we see our role, is that kind of coordination across private and public sector actors for this kind of very large project that otherwise can run into serious coordination problems. We've also assisted with the business report of the community work program in terms of whether it can scale up to 1 million participants, which is the equivalent of a couple hundred thousand full-time jobs. But really, I think in that case, the impact on participants is large. And we're hoping they can scale up 1 million in a couple of years if we can get all the organizational issues right. Again, I think we could provide a specific report on that, if that would help. In terms of restructuring the colonial economy, I think that was the whole point of the new growth path, was to say that the interesting around past dependence, where the existing enterprises, everything is in place for mining to work. It's got the stand, you know, the regulatory processes, it's got the transport, it's got the skills of development, we need to tweak it. But if we want to actually transform the economy to empower new people, then we have to align government around supporting other sectors and industries and regions, and it's much more difficult. So I think that this is where the new growth path is supposed to assist, and I think that what's becoming clear is that the infrastructure plan will be probably the central lever, because it is something which is inherent to what the state does, and our decisions about what scale we invest on, and also where we invest, what we invest in, has a huge impact on the structure of the economy, whether it's employment training or not, who benefits, and how we manage that going forward. In that context, this issue about the former so-called homeless becomes very important, and there are several projects. The SIPS thing, which is Strategic Integrated Projects, is just trying a way to conceptualize sort of key areas of work and how we coordinate them. But there are several SIPS in there that speak directly to that. There's the one around the 23 worst-served. It's not really so much a poor, it's 23 district municipalities with the worst infrastructure. So who has the worst water, et cetera, they came up with an index for that. And they are all essentially in the former so-called homeless. So there's an immediate effort to address that issue of municipal services, but also to do productive infrastructure, which I think is simple, but I tend to get the numbers mixed up, which is to say things like irrigation, fencing, and so on. So that it's not just about improving living standards, but also about giving people better access to livelihoods, which is often important to sustain the household infrastructure as well. In that context, the specific thing we're doing, I mean, we do tend to support PICC in a variety of ways. You know, we can be meetings, we provide logistics, we provide some extra support, all of those things. But specifically, we're also working with rural development and CSIR, trying to come up with a regional planning process that will look at each of these regions and say, how can they better fit into the value chains in the formal economy? So it's not just about saying, how do we uplift them in isolation, but how do we make them integrated into the core economy of the country in a way that's more advantageous? And so the idea is that we have to do that sort of on a case-by-case basis. I do think the critical, what it really points to, is that we can provide the infrastructure, but there are a range of other things that prevent private investment and emerging enterprise in those areas around the structure of market institutions, extension services, skills, and so on. And we have to make sure those things happen as well. They have to happen in a way that's tailored to the region. It's not one size fits all. And I do think that, as the Honorable Member said, there are objective challenges in terms of these areas. We're designed often to lack resources, but there are variations in terms of how badly off they are. But also, I think there's a problem around lack of capacity and funding that we have to identify and address. And I think that's one of the things where the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission should play a lead role. Because also what you have is, of course, regions are the areas with the least capacity to address the problem. And that's where I think you do need support from outside, and that's where I think something like the PICC is important. I don't know if it's that sufficient, DG.
Thank you,
Lisa.
If I can also to deal with the issues of the IDC, see from the up to the bits and capacity building.
Thank you, DG. The first one, our response is the SICA Business Hub, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. It's not to train chartered accountants. It's to train unemployed accounting graduates, typically people who have an accounting diploma or maybe a VCOM, who haven't been able to find work. Asked to apply, and then they go through a training program that then equips them to be workplace ready, and then they get placed in the workplace. So the program is to train 100 unemployed graduates and then place almost all of them either in the business hub, which provides back office support to small businesses, or to get placed in firms that require someone with the skills and experience. So it's to help the very real problem of people who have the basic degree but then can't find employment, but to fill that gap. And then also to support the business hub. The business hub will provide back office support to small businesses, and the idea that if someone gets a loan from CIFA, then they can get support in the form of mentoring and well, not quite mentoring, but business support services that's required in order to make your business work. We're just piloting at this stage, so we've only done the first 50 accounts in graduates or people with diplomas, and then the course will be finishing now at the end of November, and we're doing an evaluation, which is happening at the moment, and then we'll run the next course of 50 people early in the new year, and then the hub will start in January. So I think there was two or three questions on the business hub. I don't think that covers everything that was raised. The business hub will also be run in partnership with Softline Capital, so that we can use an accredited package that the businesses can then get proper books from. On the issue of rural areas, we have a lot of the detail from IDC, and it would, I don't know if we're going to have an opportunity to present the IDC and CIFA and well, it'll be the old SAMAC and CRULA annual reports to the committee, because there's a lot of detail on who they support in terms of different rural communities and the different provinces. Just in terms of the IDC support, here, I'm just pulling it up. The IDC's rural support in last financial year, the gross approvals was it was almost 8.5 billion rand that was approved for rural areas, and that's throughout the country. And then we've got the breakdown of which provinces received the different allocations. I could put it up with a PowerPoint if you want to, or we can ask the IDC to present, or we can send that information to that is available. And then in terms of SAMF, old SAMF and CRULA, almost all of the allocations from SAMF were in rural areas, and that would have been, in last year, it would have been about 52 million was approved, and 58 million dispersed because there was a carryover from the previous year. And almost all of that goes into rural areas because of the nature of the work of SAMF. And then from CRULA side, I don't have the breakdown for rural urban, but we've got the breakdown per province, and we can get allocations on how much each of those institutions give per province. I think it might take a bit of time if I have to go through each province now. But we are going to be joining you tomorrow to talk about the work of CIFA, and we can go into more detail on that as well in engagements tomorrow. I'm looking at the other questions. Okay. On the agro-processing fund, the background to the agro-processing fund is that cutting out of the Pioneer settlement with the Competition Commission, we had approached National Treasury and the IDC to establish a agro-processing fund to support non-dominant players, the agro-processing sector, and 250 million was allocated over a three-year period. So the first tranche last year was 34 million, which is in the financials, and then 108 million this year, 108 million next year. So the fund has started to operate, and we have seen fairly good results from the fund. And I can just quickly, I'm just flipping to that presentation, that information, but we do have, I think it's been, give me a second. Okay, I'll come back to that in a few seconds. So we do have the agro-processing fund has been fairly successful in terms of the work that it's been doing, and has made approvals, I think it's of about 17 million already from the funds to date. And so we are seeing impact on that. We can give a full report on the agro-processing fund. And then the question around the IDC and whether it's necessary to recapitalize it. At this stage, it's not necessary for government to recapitalize it. The IDC balance sheet is under-leveraged, so it can borrow quite successfully on the market. And I think once we've utilized that full balance sheet, I think in terms of the mandate, it can borrow up to 100% of its market capitalization, which is over 100 billion, and it hasn't got anywhere near that at this stage. And the program that's in line is to, over the next 5 years, increase its borrowing so that it can fulfill its developmental mandate to get to that size of amount of money to lend, on lend into the market. So it's to use the institution more effectively. And I think Minister Patel, in his budget vote speech from last year, has spoken about the program of action. I think he's spoken about an amount of 102 billion that would grow as we go further in time, and also as investments get repaid. The Rise Up Bakery, there were two questions on it. The first one was dealing with, are we hand-holding and are we giving them support? The answer is yes. We are giving them support to get them going, and we're playing a coordination role there. The question relates by Honourable Sinclair relating to the delay is correct. There has been a long delay, and there are challenges that we've had with the ECF. We're hopefully resolving those issues now, and we're getting to the point where it's come out of the ECF, and we're busy sorting out the agreements on our side. So we should get that resolved before the end of this calendar year, and the delay is unfortunate and has created problems with the communities. But we are looking at that being resolved so that the first tranche payments for 30 of the 50 units of the small micro bakeries can be resolved quite soon. And then part of the approach is that we're doing a model of a mix of cooperatives and sole proprietorships, so that we can approach the community at different levels. And then we'll hopefully learn lessons from the different approaches that we've taken, so that we can have better rollout going forward. On the issue that was raised around the phyto energy and the 39 million that was allocated, the total project is a billion. So the 39 million is not from EDD funds, it's from the ECF funds, so it's not our allocation. And the purpose of ECF, when it does work, is to try and unlock bigger investments. And if we get this right with this project, and the indications are that things are hopefully going to work out, then we would see R1 billion worth of investment coming out of that phyto energy project. Then there was a question related to the VITS project. The VITS project was run in a number of municipalities, and the idea was to train officials on various aspects related to economic development in the new growth path. I'm just checking the specific municipalities, which are not in this document that I have. So if we can send that information through in writing, then we can assist with the answering that question. I think, I don't know about the issue of ITAC.
We asked Stephen to respond to the ITAC a little after. Do you want to just cover the job fund issue of the IDC?
The UIF one. You're looking for the list of beneficiaries that are funding from? Is it the UIF jobs fund? I think we can just ask the IDC to submit that.
Okay. Can we proceed? If I can ask the CFO to respond to the issues that were referred to in terms of the start date and the overpayment of salaries. I'm not sure if I quite understood that. We might have to, I don't know if you captured that. And then there was the issue of the procurement turnaround time, and then the capital budget issue, if you can think about that.
Thanks, DG, and thanks for my acting, DG. Thanks, DG, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. On the question of staff letters, I know the Honorable Member looked at the financial statements, Honorable Gamed, and you then realized that there were letters in favor of the department, and we then made that declaration. Yeah, indeed, we overpaid two staff members. This was after the first reshuffling of cabinet, where we then got staff transferred from the public enterprises, moving with former deputy minister who joined economic development. And the DTI by then was assisting us with the personal system. And in putting, and I don't want to appear like I'm shifting the blame, but about the arrangement, there was a memorandum of understanding that was signed by both DGs. So information was incorrectly captured, and salaries were then excessively paid. We then discovered our system, because it can detect some of these errors, we detected them, and we are having all staff reaping the salaries. So it's not a loss to the state, it is a debt that to us is covered, and we are recovering the salaries to the state. And other debtors are your timing difference on the PESA system at the financial year end. There are transactions that they usually run between the 2 months. So it's only provided you need to delay some of those transactions. But the main part of it is how I've actually explained it. On the issue of procurement, Honorable Member, I can really confirm that we our turnarounds are very quick in the department, including that of procurement. We've got systems that seek to, though bureaucracy has put it in place, but we are sensitive to also service delivery, so that we can give the internal client the service that they need. So I'm quite happy with our procurement systems, and that's why we do not have a regular expenditure, because I think we are planning and everything. We're not on a crisis mode, if I may put it. If you allow me to go on to the internal audit one, the question on cost sourcing, just to clarify that one. By cost sourcing, we, remember Honorable Nyambi, we implied that although the head of internal audit was in the employ of the unit did not have their own body that it needed to be in a position to assist the head of internal audit. So what we then did, we sourced services from two firms of chartered accountants to come and assist us. We brought in Grant Thornton. We also brought in another firm of, but we brought two firms of auditors. They performed internal audits, and there was supply chain, payments, salaries, performance, and basically that's the explanation. But the department has since moved on, and we continue to bring capacity into the department. This was basically to tighten up the governance of the department. Thank you.
I'm very good. Figures the agro-processing fund.
So
the agro-processing fund has approved 11 applications to raise 74.7 million. and a total of 981 jobs are expected to be created through those investments. They're in six provinces. The only province that we haven't made investment in yet are Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Northwest, but they are working on that. Then the investments have been in dairies and fruit packaging and canning, confectionery products, a pasta producer, soup making company, a beverage company, two mushroom companies, and meat company that has a component of workers' trust, and then we've got pipeline deals of 131 million, so we are looking at the fund being well utilized. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
So just for interest that you can send to the Secretary the names and which provinces those agro-processing plants are, because it helps us in our work of oversight.
We will do that, Honourable Chair. Chair, I'm going to ask the HR Director to just respond to the issues of off-skill flexibility and the issue of employment and qualified staff.
Thanks, Mr. Aysel, the Minister, DG, and Honourable Chair and members. As DG indicated in the response earlier, indicated that we are also working on the transitional structure is analysed, and we are actually in the process of trying to come with a process to make sure that we implement that structure. But the question that came clearly, I think, from the presentation is the fact that there has been slow pace in terms of filling up the positions. And that was also attributed to the fact that the positions that we are referring to is not normally job positions. It's a high-level personnel and specialist also. I'm talking about people with qualifications in terms of development, economics, and so forth, because those are the skills that we really need the land function to be able to deliver on what deliverables. And I must also indicate that, when we advertise as well, the response that was there, you would normally find people who don't have much experience in this particular areas. Yes, they are qualified in, in terms of development economics or economics and such, but you find that the expertise that you are looking for, to be able to be actually be appointed in those higher level positions, those were the challenges that we are experiencing. As now, we are even resorted to headhunting processes, in trying to solve the skills as well. Those are the strategies that we have now employed just to be able to find ways how to solve the equities in terms of that. And
I want us to be honest on this issue and just speak the truth only. If I were to ask a question, the DG said we need to retain staff. There's a problem of losing staff all the way to other departments of private sector. Where would you get people that have the skills if we are all looking for people that have the skills? It's a normal situation. It's either the department trained and has got a pool inside where they can uplift people and then they can get other people to enter the department. Because that's the problem. I know people that have got degrees in economics, only experience and whatever that they don't have. So where would the department assist such people in getting the experience?
I think that's the problem with our vacancies. We have excellent people, I'm looking at one of them, and very highly trained people as assistant directors and deputy directors, who I think would be something any department could boast of. But our vacancy tends to be a chief director level, and we're always stuck in the public service. You can take, you look at your candidates for a job, and you can take only 10 under 2. But the people who are at that level of experience are good tend to be at other jobs. And you can take the best of the lot, but if they're not good enough, you really, as you know, you're sort of stuck with them forever. So we're always having this difficult problem of how do we manage that. So I think because we're in department, we're having to hire people that otherwise we would have had a succession plan. You know, but because we haven't been around that long, we're still trying to hire people who actually have experience from elsewhere. And like you say, it is a very big problem. I personally think that we have our junior people are amongst the best in government, that I've actually had people from outside tell me that when they've been on training courses. But our problem is at that senior level.
Honourable Chair, I think this is an important issue, and we note the concerns that the honourable members are raising around this issue. And it is something that we're aware of, and it's been raised in other fora as well. And we will look at how we manage that in terms of bringing the right people in, but also assisting with training capacity and so on. Chair, I think if I can then deal with, in fact, I'm going to ask Neil just to deal with the untapped question, and then I'll respond to the rest of the issues.
The issue with ITAC, and I said it's like this, ITAC does policy and trade promotion, ITAC does the regulatory issues. So under the World Trade Organization, we have to have a system that's fairly independent and unbiased for deciding on tariff increases or reductions. And that's what ITAC does. So they'll get somebody coming in and say, for instance, you know, we're being flooded by Brazilian chicken pieces, it's destroying the economy, we need a dumping tariffs to protect us while we adjust. Whether it's under the WTO rules about how you do it. That goes to ITAC. But if you want to say, how are we going to promote South African wine abroad, that goes to ITAC.
Thank you, Nina. Honourable Chair members have identified about 17 other issues that have been raised. I'm going to deal with it quite quickly. It will be very short. I think just on the BIDS program, maybe just to...
Sorry, Special Advisor Number Acting DG. Members, just for me, because the plenary also at 2 o'clock, I wonder if the Special Advisor can't the issues given to us in writing. Is there any of the operating issues that you need to address, Honourable Adams?
Yes, HR, please. What is in Africa? Thank you.
If you indicate to me how many minutes we have, then I will run through it very quickly.
Okay.
The rest we can respond in writing in terms of the detail.
So I wanted to say, so that we can find approach, let's agree that let's give him 5 minutes. And then he's not going to be able to round off in 5 minutes, then he's there that to can be given in writing. Instead of just having a specific question, because it will make others who have their own questions be ready.
5 minutes.
Just to say on this program, the staff member was responsible for that. He passed away recently, and we will be appointing somebody in the department to take over those responsibilities. On the internal audit issues, the challenges of capacity, just to inform committee that we have now appointed 2 staff members to join the internal unit division, and we are working very closely with our internal audit committee to ensure that we deal with the issue of capacity. The question of solar water heaters, geysers, I think people use it interchangeably, and so it's difficult to say that it's one or the other, but around the buying local, I think that's still a huge problem for us in the country. The need to locally manufacture the geysers and all the components that make up the solar water heaters. DTI, together with EED and other departments, are looking at the next round of designations. And the green economy and solar water geysers is one of the areas that will be designated. And so we will see an increase in local manufacturing around. On the Power Business South Africa issue, we will make the list of products available. We will get that from them and make that available in writing. The NGP capacity building programs, the 2 that was outstanding at the end of the last financial year was the Eastern and Northern Cape, but I can report to the committee that those workshops were held in April and May of this year. which is in the current financial year. We will send the list of the acronyms as requested. On the AG's comments, I think the point here is that we believe that it's important for the AG to highlight areas where they want to specifically take note of and address during the new financial year. We agree with those issues that they've raised, but we also need to emphasize that we've had a clean audit and the interaction with internal audit, the department, the ministry and the AG is very good, and we work closely with them to address those issues. We've dealt with the 30-day payment and procurement issues. We will submit reports, Honourable Chair and members, on assistance to local government. I think that was a specific question that was raised. The audit member who only attended one of the four meetings that was raised in an internal audit committee meeting. The problem was that the internal audit committee had to change two of their meetings, dates of the meetings, and she was unable to attend, and they accepted the explanation that was dealt with by both the AG and the Inter Audit Committee. The write-up issue we've dealt with, and the Cyto Energy one. On the Rhinosterburg IDP, I think the comment made that we must maybe take a district approach is worth looking at, and I think that is something which we will get our team deal for these issues to look at. But I agree that we need to take a holistic view, and maybe looking at it from a district's point of view is a good idea. On the IDC-related issues, I think Solis covered that, but also both CIFA and the IDC will be coming to the committee tomorrow, and maybe we can get them to respond to some of the issues in more detail that was raised here today. Chair, on the targets, I want to agree with the Honourable Member that at the end of the day, as government and as departments, we must be able to measure on how we improve people's lives and what impact we make on our people and on our communities in relation to the work that we do. And so that is something which we consciously discuss and raise in our meetings, and we note the comment that has been made. On the representativity issues, the DG would like to respond on that, and I'm also then going to ask the DG to conclude the session. I think I've covered the balance of the issues, but we will check, and as you requested, Chair, we are going to send some information in writing, and we'll make sure that all the other issues are covered. I hope I used less than 5 minutes. Thank you.
Chairperson, with your permission. I thought there were four things that I could just lift up. The first is to agree that indeed we're all Africans, but we are required in terms of equity issues to deal with an analysis of staffing processes in particular ways, and it's that thing is seen in that process. So irrespective of what category we get recorded in those documents, indeed we are all Africans. And I think on that, to pick up on the issue of the issue of the disability, certainly I think the nature of the department is such that there is scope for us to really go way above our targets. But when you're dealing with a small staffing number, one person indeed can land up where they're a percentage. I think that the interaction, I hope, has helped to convince the Honourable Member more that we do have a role to play, and we will certainly continue to engage with that and to find, I think it's useful to have that challenge thrown back to us. And we will certainly take that on board in terms of the way in which we present our work to really be able to identify the role that we do play and the value that we do add. The measurement on the impact on the ground that Mr. Marza has just spoken of, it's fortuitous to have the select committee focus on this at this point, given that we're going into the planning session, because it does mean what are the indicators that we use in our planning process that has enabled us to go forward in a way that tracks better the role that we do play. So I think for me, just to conclude to say, to appreciate the the support that the Select Committee has given the department in this interaction. Very strong guidance, and certainly we will meet up to the requests that have been made in immediate terms to provide things in writing, but going forward to make sure that we focus our presentation to unpack both at municipality level and provincial level what work has been done. Thank you.
Honourable members, I think Honourable Gray.
Yeah, Chair, I suppose many of the issues were all over to tomorrow's meeting, as you indicated. So, but just the two issues, the one about the job fund, I don't know if it will be addressed tomorrow, job fund, and then, yeah, then the issue about the write-up, Chair, I don't know if the, I can ask the DG if they can give me a written report, because there's some issues. I heard from Mr. Wien that there was some 50 out of the 50 has been approved. My understanding was that there was 50 approved. Now, I found it strange that only 50 will now be rolled out. But the big issue is the time frame. I mean, the years that it will happen somewhere in the near future. That's certainly gone to move like that. So if I can request a report regarding RISA. Thank you.
Chairperson, just something very interesting. I'm very glad to hear the department is training chartered accountants in experience to help SMEs. You know, we now went to the Northern Cape, and there are 32 municipalities in the Northern Cape. Do you know that of the 32 municipalities, there are 10 CFOs only with grade 10 qualification, grade 12 qualification, just as a matter of interest. So we need far more, and I'm not saying it's a function of economic development, but it is a crisis. So thank you for training those.
Yeah, I think most of the responses we were received in writing that we did not allude to or did not have a chance of answering. The SIP stands for, I think that's the one acronym.
Strategic Implementation. The Infrastructure Program.
Okay.
Or Integrated. Strategic Integrated Project.
Okay. Strategic Integrated Project. That's for the PIGCBPI. The Potential Infrastructure Committee. They use the SIPs. So, DG, back to the Express Advisor and the staff, honourable members. I think we need more interaction with this department, economic development. Sorry. Yeah. We have neglected the scope of interacting, but as you see, we are clustered and we focus on a lot of other things as well. But due to the nature of our work and oversight of municipalities as well as provinces, I think we need more interaction. But also thank you, Acting DG, for allowing some of your officials to go with us when we do our oversight work. That really helped a lot. It's really helping because we can address issues there and there in terms of our oversight, and they go back to communities. I must mention here specifically Mr. Dumangosi, was very hands-on and really is a key asset in the department. But we want to wish you all the best, the strength, and to carry forward also with your planning session so that we can come, that you could come out today and convince the honourable frankly that you need to be here and you need to play a leading role in coordinating all the economic functions of government and that. Honourable members, just a request, tomorrow we will start at 2. We tried to start a bit earlier, but it's lunch time between 1 and 2, and we have to look at the department knows. So it's a lot of logistical work. But if we can start on time at 2 o'clock, we can finish on time, around about 4, half past 4, so that you still go get some time to go and powder your hose, and let's go fix our hair, our perms and all that for the end of the function of Parliament tomorrow evening. So please, let's start at 2 o'clock so that we can finish off in time. With that meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much, DG, for you and your staff, and we hope to see you soon. soon also back in our committee. Thank you very much, members. Enjoy your lunch. And those who are traveling, have a safe trip. Thank you.